to Libya now. What will be on the page of history when the Libya war campaign, call it what you will, regime change, airstrike, is over? In a sense, it's an old pattern of generals who try to substitute air power for a full-scale invasion, to mixed success. But does Libya represent even a new twist? In the sense that last week, the U.S. quietly approved the use of remote-controlled Predator drone strikes in the Libya campaign. Drones have been used extensively in Afghanistan and Iraq, but in Libya, where there are no U.S. boots on the ground, is it possible to have a decisive effect on a battlefield from a remote-controlled bunker in Nevada and literally get home in time for dinner with the wife and kids? A British Defense Ministry study suggests this morning that the drone technology may accelerate the use of force by virtue of its disembodied remote control, almost sterile-seeming qualities. Joining us to discuss the impact of Predator drones on the Libya campaign and on warfare in the 21st century is Andrew Bacevich, professor of history and international relations at Boston University. He's also the author of Washington Rules, America's Path to Permanent War, which has just come out in paperback. Professor, give me a sense, a gut-level sense of where you think the drone impact is heading in the conduct of warfare in this century.
Well, I think it's really not new. If we recall back in the 1990s, Bill Clinton had a tendency to rely on low-risk air power to give the impression of doing something. You recall the cruise missile strikes that he launched against al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. I think it was back in 1998. You recall the attack on the supposed chemical weapons factory in Khartoum.
Sure.
At the same time. So to my mind, this is really a way for politicians to give the appearance of doing something without undertaking any great risk. And, you know, if a UAV attack tomorrow actually does take out Gaddafi, it's possible that this small escalation could produce decisive effects. I think that's quite unlikely. And I do think that the British study, which suggested that UAVs might provide politicians a certain encouragement to use force more frequently and more recklessly, I think that's a legitimate concern.
Hmm. Andrew Bacevich there, professor of history and international relations at Boston University, speaking about the impact of Predator drones on the conflict in Libya and elsewhere. Well, what does that look like to Kevin Gambold? He's a former Royal Air Force Tornado pilot turned Predator Reaper operator. He's now director of operations for Unmanned Experts, which is a consultancy firm for unmanned aerial vehicles, on the line from Montgomery, Alabama. Kevin, as an operator of one of these Predator drones, what's it like being the sort of business end of a politician, as Andrew Bacevich says, need to appear to do something?
Well, morning to you both. And the professor is absolutely right. And it's been sort of a klaxon call, I think, that we've made, is that UAVs are not these killer drones that everybody likes to talk about. Over 97% of the missions that they perform is simply intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. Very few of them are actually armed. So the fact that we've been effectively the Western world lobbing cruise missiles around the globe for the last 15-odd years should... This is a step forward in legitimizing some of these this move to war. I think you'll get a lot more bang for your buck, as it were, for this small escalation that the press talked about.
But take me into the experience, Kevin. I mean, we talked during the Vietnam era about the disembodied nature of dropping bombs from far up in the atmosphere on civilians in Vietnam and what that did to Navy pilots or didn't do to Navy pilots in the sense of having a connection to that war. What's it like to operate a mission from a bunker and then go home and mow the lawn?
Well, it's not without its pressures, but having done the manned bombing piece, the tornado pilot in Kosovo and Iraq, and also the unmanned piece, the thing you don't expect is you are, by and large, more connected to the fight and more you have greater situational awareness from the UAV than you do from the manned cockpit.
That's astounding.
And the reason is because you are firstly, you're overhead the action. You're staring at the ground. You're not in a confined cockpit with a 20-minute timeline before your next refueling episode. You have literally 5, in some cases 8 hours in the cockpit, staring at the ground, sucking up the information of what's going on in the battle space. It's not what people expect, but it's actually what is happening.
Kevin Gambold, former Royal Air Force Tornado pilot turned Predator Reaper operator. Andrew Bacevich, sort of conclude for us. Is the Predator drone program a great investment in terms of military tactics or just in terms of international politics?
Oh, I think you used you chose the correct word. I think that it is a good investment. It provides improvements in the tactical realm. It's money well spent. What we need to avoid is the delusion that this tactical improvement necessarily translates into strategic or political gains.
What are the restraints on the use of Predator drones, if the British Defense Ministry study is to be believed?
Well, I mean, this really does get us into the realm of politics. I mean, the constraint on the use of force in this country is supposed to be the Constitution of the United States. In other words, the system is set up such that it's the Congress, which is supposed to be making basic decisions about when and where we use force. But, of course, in many respects, the Constitution has become a dead letter in that regard. The existence of UAVs simply facilitates decisions on the part of presidents to decide to intervene.
Pulls us farther away from any sort of War Powers Act. Andrew Bacevich, professor of history and international relations at Boston University, author of Washington Rules, America's Path to Permanent War. Thanks so much.
You bet.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.